Ladies and gentlemen, do welcome to the next episode of my Safe Bet Show. And it's a great privilege, and certainly it's a pleasure, because the two of us that you can see on the screen, we have been friends for a few years, to welcome Mr. Art Bojkowski on the Safe Bet Show. Art, thanks for doing this, and great to have you here.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Martin.
It's our pleasure. So let me delve right into it, because you haven't spent that much time in our industry just yet, but you've already established yourself, or you established a reputation for yourself as one of the leading fundraisers. So to put things into context, and that would be, I hope, a great segue into talking about your career as a whole, but even more importantly, at this stage, about your career prior to you having joined our industry. In your own words, you've been involved in fundraising for, and that's very respectable, over 40 years, and you've raised $1 billion for a long list of causes that you have worked for and you have worked on. So my first question, if I may, is this. How did fundraising change during those 40 years? Or is it still the same?
It's such an interesting question, Martin, because I was actually talking to my best friend earlier today about it. And he also had a many decade career in fundraising. And it's changed. It's become more technology driven. But I'm the first one to tell you, not for the better. Because in my view, the standard of excellence in fundraising is interacting with people. It's building relationships. And that's why when I came into the field, and probably one of the better things about it for me was that I came in with a pretty objective, you know, perspective, because I had not been around the industry. So I did a lot of listening sessions. I went to conferences and talked to people. I felt like I ramped up pretty quickly. And then we could get into why it was that the work of the ICRG is so important. So I really think that the relationships that I have with the board, we have an outstanding board of 20, you know, well-known people in the industry, people who are involved in responsible gaming, and just getting out there and talking to senior people in the industry has been extremely productive from a fundraising standpoint.
It's always great to have people, and I hope this won't come across as too cynical, who are in charge of the purse strings, but I suppose at the same time, to your point, and earlier today when getting ready for this interview, I did take a refresher look at the setup of your board, and it's really the who is who, if I may put it that way, of this industry. Lots of those who indeed have been involved with responsible gambling matters and, I suppose, fundraising. But let me stick to the theme of fundraising. We are now very firmly in the run-up to the 24 US presidential elections. So lots of fundraisers going on, of course, also for the congressional elections governor races and whatnot. So maybe a different level, but I suppose my next question relates to any methods of yours, any art of art, if I may put it that way, that you would have invented. You talked about interaction with people, but do you have any particular methods that you would be prepared to share with the audience of this podcast?
Well, it's very interesting, because I think in a lot of industries, everybody's looking for the next best thing, the next big idea. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty old school when it comes to this, because if you find something that works, and it worked in the first 10 years of my career and the next 10 years of my career and so on and so forth, I'm going back to the well. I keep doing what I do best. In fact, I had a conversation yesterday with an extremely well-known senior executive in the field, and he said to me, I learned a lot about fundraising from you. To me, that's a tremendous compliment. And what he was really saying is, in the course of a relatively short time, which is about 3 years, less than 3 years that I've been affiliated with the ICRG, we become friends. I mean, I respect him. He respects me. we don't just talk about money. We talk about the industry. We talk about sustainability. We talk about what books we read, you know, and that, I think that is the differentiator. I think for me, maybe the single most significant change is that most of the people that I interact with now, Martin, are younger than I am. It's really interesting. And so when you deal with people that are younger than you, it mostly sort of falls on the two extremes. The one extreme is, and this is the bad extreme, is you're a dinosaur, you're yesterday's news, you don't use technology the way we do because we grew up with it. That's the one side. The other side is you're respected and revered for the knowledge and the accomplishments that you've had over almost, now it's almost five decades, almost five decades I've been in the workforce. So I think in certain respect, it's a mixed bag, but overall, I have to say that people in this industry have embraced me, support the work that we do. They've been very gracious. And I think those are the things that frankly end up, the cause of all of that is supporting the ICRG. That's the causal effect of building those kind of relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're, for the record, you're by no means a dinosaur. And as we've just discussed, there's just nothing wrong with sticking to what's worked. As they say, no need to fix it if it ain't broken. But I was actually going to ask you about the use of technology, because you're exposed to it every day. You would constantly hear how the likes of AI or machine learning may revolutionize the responsible gambling space. But you've already made the point that you don't believe, and I would agree with you, at least on the responsible gambling side of things, but when it comes to fundraising. So what would there be a particular issue that you would have with technology? I'm not talking about technology challenges, but is it, as you've said, that it cannot replace the person-to-person, the human interaction, while you and others out there are seeking to convince even the likes of me and others like that are in a similar position to mine about supporting a particular cause?
Yes, I mean, I think that it's a shortcut, right? It's easy. You create a message, you figure out who the audience is, and you push a button. But actually, when you talk to people in the fundraising world, people that I've known and respected for a long time, or just even anybody, and you say, how many of these hits do you get on your computer every single day? Somebody asking you for money. And how many then do you respond to in a positive way? The answer is almost always, I get a lot, and I don't respond to any of them. And so I think actually what I've tried to explain, you know, when I've given an opportunity to talk about the state of fundraising today versus the way it was decades ago, is that all this is really doing is creating donor fatigue. And that's a bad thing. People are like, they're disconnecting from interacting with people who are bringing forward meaningful causes. And that's why, in a certain respect, if you look at what we've accomplished over a couple of years in the fundraising sense, it's counterintuitive, because charities in general right now are really, really struggling. In fact, last year, charities as a whole raised less money than they did the year before. And at the same time, you can say, I mean, look at the economy in the United States, it's booming, stock market at historic highs. There's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with that. And I think a lot of it is people are just getting burned out. That's kind of where I think technology fits in, and that obviously not in a positive way.
And I would suggest that this lesson, and thanks for it, applies to all sorts of other walks of life, the disconnect that you've talked about, the fact that these days we just keep staring at and swiping on our phones. But let me move on to ICRG. I suppose arguably very few of them would know what that moniker stands for, but let's remind them that ICRG stands for the International Center for Responsible Gaming. It's an award-winning preeminent research organization, the goal being better understanding gambling disorder, and on the back of that, delivering tools to keep players safe. So in a nutshell, what would be the genesis, the evolution of that organization? And in your book, what has been perhaps one or two proudest moments of ICRG throughout its existence?
The ICRG, which started as the NCRG, the National Center for Responsible Gaming, the impetus for starting the organization was there was no research, frankly, being done to understand gambling disorder or problem gambling. And the AGA, the American Gaming Association, initially was behind recognizing that that research needed to be done. Was also wise enough at the time to be aware it had to be disassociated with the American Gaming Association because it had to be totally independent. And so the organization was created 25 years ago. 100% of our funding is from the industry, which is important to understand and to talk about a little bit later. But I would say that the things that I would think that we could hang our hat on over 25 years are the integrity of our organization, that the research that we've been doing over 25 years has had a positive impact on problem gambling, things like self-exclusion, some of the better known things that are commonly understood to keep players safe, are things that came out of research that we've done. We work with some of the most prestigious universities in the world. And basically because of the firewall, which is so important to understand, where let's say our board is responsible for financial resource development for the ICRG. But once those monies are secured, the firewall means that those monies go to the scientific advisory board. So all of that side of the process is done by scientists. And so there's a request for application, and the applications come in, they're peer reviewed, eventually recommendations go to the scientific advisory board, and those studies are funded. The importance being that the integrity of the organization is critical, and the results of the research can't be impugned. And so basically, I think it's that. I think it's the work product. It's the high level of work that we've done over 25 years. All of our research is published in some of the most prestigious journals in the world. And so I think our game is played at a very high level, Mark.
I can't agree more. And let me focus on your tenure as president of ICRG. So at the very top, at the helm of the organization, and it's without a shadow of doubt that you've done miracles for the organization, because let me give the audience, and you know them inside out, the relevant numbers. Now, you've grown the funding for research from $1.3 million back in 21 to $3.4 at the end of last year. And that funding has enabled the ICRG to fund 30 studies at a time of indeed an exponential growth in the gambling industry. So first of all, hats off to you. And would you mind telling us what are some of the leading topics of those studies? And also, you've done 30, you know, how many more have you guys in store for the industry and what they may focus up on?
It's a great question, Martin. Thank you. I would say that when I came to ICRG and we were raising $1.3 million, we were on the table and the paddles were out. we were really literally at a point in time where we might not have been able to sustain the organization, which was part of the reason that I took the job. Because I felt I could make an immediate impact because of my experience with fundraising and things like that. But, you know, interestingly, when you spoke about ICRG and suggested that people should be aware of our organization, the reality was people were not aware. Here was an organization that had been doing good, solid work to help keep people safe who gamble for 25 years. And when I talked to people initially, they were like, who are you? So I think I realized that we had been operating under the radar screen. We were coming out of COVID, which frankly hit the whole, you know, charitable world very hard. And so I realized that we had to function on three levels. One was rebuilding our board. When I came, we only had 8 people on the board. So we built the board to 20 spots. And as you said, the right kind of people, that was important because that gives credibility to the organization. We need to market better. So we hired a part-time marketing person. We rebuilt our website. We started to go to conferences so that we could talk to people about ICRG. And then I think the third part of it is that, you know, those individual meetings that I spoke about earlier, promoting the work of our organizations and the importance of what we were doing going forward, especially in light of what you said before, which is there's so much growth in this industry. There's so many new things to try to better understand. So essentially, we have gotten off the mat. I would say that the single most important evidence of that is being the charity of the year at the ICE conference in London. And that also speaks to the fact that we're no longer just branded here in the United States. We're becoming well-known all over the world. And that's been important to me. You can't become well-known all over the world if you're not seen in other parts of the world. So in this short period of time, I've been in Spain. I've been London a couple times for ICE. Obviously, I go to, you know, things here. I'm talking about going to the Latin America conference in Miami. That's the way you go out and you meet people and talk about your organization, build your brand.
Perhaps belatedly, but congratulations on the award and congratulations on the 25th anniversary as well, that I'm sure you guys will get a chance to celebrate and commemorate. Responsible gambling research does play a critical role, as we've been discussing throughout this podcast, in shaping the gambling markets and the overall industry across those markets. So what in your view represents, for want of better expression, good research, and how do we go about actioning it? Because every now and then, and in the usual spirit of brutal candor, you've heard it from me a few times, it would be futile to, in our, of course, behind-the-scenes discussions, would be futile to just produce, in my view, research for its own sake, so that, unfortunately, it would end up sitting on that proverbial shelf collecting a lot of dust. So what is good research?
I think the research itself that we're doing right now speaks to and answers the question that you just asked. The reality is that the work product of the ICRG isn't the amount of money I raise, it's the research that it actually funds. So let me share, so you connect to the timeliness of the research that we're currently doing. So the first topic is examining responsible gambling advertising practices and testing effects of actual responsible gambling messages on behavior. That's being done at Cambridge Health Alliance, which is a teaching hospital of Harvard Medical School. So this is the quality of the kind of research that we're doing, but it's so topical. I mean, how many days can you be in the industry where you don't read, like I did today, Lithuania is talking about banning advertising. On what basis? What's the evidence to suggest that it should be banned? Now, I'm not saying that I know the answer to that question, but research will give us an answer to that question. So that's one of the studies we're doing. The area of youth, we know that youth are an at-risk population. So let me share, we're doing 4 or 5 studies just on that target population. An investigation of esports betting, involvement, risk, and gambling-related harms among esports bettors. Gambling in emerging adults, understanding risk pathways. That's being done at Rutgers. A very credible research institution when it comes to gambling. Couple more are a virtual reality intervention of reducing problematic gambling in young adults. So we're in this space in a big way because we're particularly worried. Because since gambling became, you know, so easily done, all you really have to do is pick up this device, you know, any minute of the day to place a bet. So it's really getting into sort of the new vanguard of where gambling is going to try to understand the inherent risk to those populations that may be engaged in gambling and not doing so responsibly.
A lot of work has been done, a lot of work in progress, which in itself is, of course, commendable. If perhaps for a split second I may stick to the theme of, and then we will move on, concerns related to research, and again, one of mine, I will just represent my ideas here on the podcast. Now, some folks, including myself, because I've been in this industry that's moving at what appears to be million miles an hour, there's always been a lot of emphasis on speed to the market, not just in the literal sense of that word, but also figuratively speaking. So some folks, sometimes even myself, would suggest, well, yeah, we need to do research and it does need to dictate or at least help inform our decisions. But research may take a long, long time. What would be your reaction to that? Is there a way of perhaps dissipating or discarding that myth? Or if there's some truth to it and you guys are already addressing the what I call the time to market?
I think this is so interesting, Martin. I'm glad you asked this question because it's really very timely in that what I've learned in this job is that there is a methodology that defines how you do high quality research. And that's what we've been doing for 25 years. And there's no margin for error on that. Cannot be changed. We're not going to sacrifice quality to get something out sooner. Now, how does that bear? Again, something I read today, it was a survey. Now, surveys, not research, that showed that there was significant growth in the percentage of young people. This was in a jurisdiction outside of this country, a significant surge in participation in gambling. But the timeline for that was over a four-week period. That doesn't mean anything. It's not as significant, and yet it's carried as if it is significant in one of the newsletters I get. So this is problematic because 4 weeks doesn't mean anything. If you really want to understand somebody's behavior, you do a longitudinal study over a number of years to really get a sense of how that person engages around a certain practice. Now, the good news is that I think we can accelerate what I call knowledge translation. And what that means is that one of the ways, so let's say a study is finished. Very, very soon, hopefully between now and the third quarter of the year, the very large sports wagering behavior study that's been done at the University of New Mexico is going to be finished. It's going to be published. So then you get to knowledge translation, which is, what do we learn from this? How do we take it from what's going to be written for a PhD scientist and make it understandable to the people, responsible gaming people, so on and so forth, the people that are on the floor? How do we make it understood? What are the key findings? Now, that we can accelerate, all right? Typically now we do it, we do our conferences, we do webinars. So we bring the research out to the public in those ways. Then once we figure out what we learned from the study, the last part of it is, I've talked to some of the younger RG people to create operational task forces. How do we've learned this, how do we translate that knowledge into a plan or into a program or into an activity that we're going to try on the floor of your casinos? That's where, because typically it takes 10 years to activate research, and we're not going to do that. we're going to move that a lot faster.
So in other words, not sure whether Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock would have agreed with us. There's, of course, quite some need for speed. But to your point, to obtain quality research, we need to factor the dead in and pit it against the speed factor. You started talking about actioning the research. So let's please, for a few minutes, talk about responsible gambling in general, especially in this country, i.e. the United States. You've had, or you've gained in your role at the helm of the ICRG, plenty of experience with an exposure to the responsible gambling ecosystems. So in your view, and I suppose that is the perennial question, and I've asked my previous guest that question as well. So if I may, what is it the industry is doing or has done well on that front? And at the same time, what might not have gone so well so that we're instilling some balance into the proceedings?
Sure. I'm going to start with the second part of it. What are we not doing so well? And I think what we're not doing so well is that I don't think there's universal acceptance of the need within the industry to own the problem. Okay. I think it's changed on the other side of it exponentially positively. But I think that so you have designated people, particularly in the larger companies, who are supposed to be addressing this, who spend 24/7. And they're great. They're passionate. They're talented. They tend to be younger people. But at the end of the day, if you really want to impact this, it has to get to the C-suite. It's got to be embraced by the top decision makers within the industry. And as I'm saying, I think there's been tremendous traction and movement in that direction. I have an advisory council at the ICRG of some of the top CEOs in the world, which is tremendous. And I did that with purpose because I can directly influence them. And hopefully then that influences the kind of work that's being done within their company on responsible gaming. So I think there's a lot of progress, but we still have a long way to go. There's still a lot of companies that are not connected to this in the way they need to be. And that's part of why I met with the CEO of a major slot manufacturer yesterday, and I made my case, and he said, we're going to get on board with you. And that's, you know, it's got to be that hand-to-hand combat that people really do understand that we can make a difference. That's the key, that we can make a difference in the lives of people that may have a problem. You know, gambling disorder is really, really a challenging, problematic brain function disorder. And it doesn't only affect the individual, it affects, we know, 7 or 8 other people around them. So the more that we can do to mitigate harm to players, the more good we're doing on the planet, really. It's very, very significant work.
So fingers crossed that hand-to-hand combat is more karate style, where the fighters respect each other as opposed to wrestling, which in all honesty, in most of its forms, seems to be rather fake. Anyway, before I give Art 60 seconds to convey his key messages, this podcast has become a bit renowned for questions about sports, because we all love sports, and I hope, Art, you're not an exception. So we are getting closer to key parts of the season of several major leagues, major competitions, of course. March Madness, for the record, we're filming this on the 13th of March, so that's already kicked off, and then we will have a great joy of going through another season of both NHL and NBA playoffs. So in your view, which teams will be doing well across these three competitions?
Well, first of all, Martin, I don't know if you know this, but I've been coaching basketball since 2011, and I've coached 80 teams. I've coached about 500 games. And having said that, I probably know no more than anybody else when it comes to the question that you've just asked. But I will throw out, I do love basketball, and I have been watching some of the college teams over the course of the last couple of months. I I'm going to throw my hat in the ring behind UConn to win it all. They've got two really athletic bigs, which I think is unusual. They bring these guys in and out. They're very, very good. They've got some sharp shooters. They play pretty good defense, and they're very well coached. So I'm gonna throw that out there. But I think we should also have a Cinderella team, because there's always a Cinderella team. And so I'm going to throw out Texas Tech as my Cinderella team, which they'll probably be a 7 seed or something like that. But I've watched them a few times. I'm really impressed with how they move the ball. Also well coached. So that's what I'm going to go. That's where I'm headed with college. I will also say that the Stetson Hatters are in the NCAA finals for the championships for the first time. Why would anybody care? Well, my brother went to Rollins College, and Stetson was their rival. And so I hope Stetson goes down in the first round. Do not want them to win again. So that's my reading on that. With the NBA, I, as a high school level coach, I mean, I've coached 12-year-olds all the way up to graduated seniors in high school. And so it's like between recreation ball and club ball. Club ball, my club team won 4 AAU, 5 AAU tournaments out of the 9 we were in. I mean, we really, really had a great team and great kids. I tell them, if you want to learn anything about basketball, don't watch the NBA. It's just not the basketball I grew up with, the two-man game and stuff like that. No. But I like the Celtics this year. I think they have a good chance of going all the way. Not that I'm a Celtics fan. I'd like to say the Phoenix Suns, but I can't. So that's where I'm going there. I'm a big hockey fan. I grew up in Burlington, Vermont, and we were all about hockey. College, I went to many college hockey games at the University of Vermont. I think you could have a wild card this year. I think there's some really strong teams in the West. I'm a West fan, and I think Vancouver has a really solid team this year. And, you know, maybe it's Vancouver and I hate to go with Boston twice, but maybe Vancouver and the Bruins in the final. But I'd like to see a Western team win. I'm always a fan of the West. So that's my hockey pick.
And well, I certainly wouldn't mind the Bruins to be in the final, perhaps against the McJesuses. The Canucks wouldn't be too bad. And clearly, if the great Pop ever decides to retire from the Spurs, they know whom to call. They're now hitting the home straight of this podcast. So maybe an unfair question, but I do it every single time. It's a bit of a stock of this podcast. So 60 seconds for my guest, Mr. Pojkowski, to convey your key messages, Art, please.
Thank you. I would say, first of all, I really appreciate being invited. It means a lot to me. I love this job. I love the work that we're doing. I feel like we're going to make a substantial difference in the space that we're in, truly can help people, which is what I've devoted my life to. I've worked in the not-for-profit space my whole life, and I came to this with purpose, and I feel good about what we're doing. But I would also mention that, you know, when we became an international organization, we didn't do anything about it. And that's why we have two representatives on the board that I believe you know, Martin, you know, one from Spain and one from Denmark. We're actively involved in soliciting funds. Some of the major European companies are standing with us when it comes to fundraising. And we're doing research all over the world. I didn't review some of, we funded a major study in Sydney, Australia. We're doing a study in Germany. So to be an international organization, you have to do all of that. And I didn't find an occasion to say that before, but I think that's important to us in a lot of ways, because markets are different, jurisdictions are different, cultures are different. So I think all in, there's a lot more to be done. I'm proud of what we've accomplished so far. I have ambitious goals. We've had a great chairman in Mark Leporelli, who's well known in the field and well respected. He'll be completing his term at the end of the year, and we'll find somebody else who'll be prestigious to lead our organization and board, be my part. So that's a little bit of an overview of where we are and where we're headed. And I'm sure you'll hear much more about us in the future.
Thanks for that. Please keep it going. Keep going strong, ladies and gentlemen. This was Mr. Arthur Pojkowski, president of the ICRG. Thanks for listening. My name is Martin Lechka. This has been the latest episode of the Safe Bet Show, and I shall see you next time.